Not all members of the brigade can cope with the road rescue and industrial rescue. It's a very traumatic experience. And, you know, you've really got to operate at times when people are in extreme agony and still conscious and, you know, with screams and sort of groaning and yelling and that sort of thing. And that does have a very bad effect on the personnel. And the authority, so much so that as the traffic increased and the calls increased and everybody got a motor car, the accidents increased at such a rate that they had to do something about counselling after an event. And the authority now has a team that that goes around and follows up immediately after any exposure of the firemen, and their council run down.
And what about, like, surely you've, as you said, you experienced heaps. Do you think that, like, it would have helped you more back then if there was something like that then, or?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can still remember quite vividly some of the scenes I attended, and they often come back.
Back, yeah.
Particularly, you know, if this is an occasion that you've known someone that's been involved. So, and then of course, there's no pressure to put on the guys for that reason to take on that sector of our service. That's their sort of decision. Not so much with the career people, that's their job.
Yeah.
But even some of them can't handle it. But, you know, there's flexibility used. And those crews are made up out of the guys, really, that can handle the situation.
Yeah, that's really terrible. What else have I got to ask? Okay, when you first joined, how many people worked in the town and sort of responded to the bell, and how did they go about it?
There were possibly in those years there would have been about 50% of the members of the brigade worked in Dandenong, or were very close proximity to Dandenong. Whereas today they've had to go further to their places of employment, and there's a very, very few available to within the city to go to a call. And of course the other thing is that in the early years the employers were quite willing to let the volunteers go. But today it's a different scene. They don't do it quite willingly or as often. And that's why the County Fire Authority system works where there's, during the daytime, in our urban brigades around the state, in the large towns, provincial cities, they've got to put in additional officers and firefighters, career firefighters, so as the daytime responsibilities can be properly attended to.
Yep.
The problem's not so bad at night because the majority of volunteers are home and they've got their pages and they can get there fairly quick.
And support from the community, I mean, you were talking about before, can you expand on that?
Well, the Dandenong Brigade has always enjoyed excellent support from the community of Dandenong, particularly the City Council. They've been very good to the brigade and the other essential services bodies in the city have all been good with their support of the brigade, and we have great relationships with the police and other essential services in the city, the SEC and gas and fuel, all those essential community services that we come in contact with. And we have an annual dinner every year the brigade puts on at the expense of the brigade, and where we invite representatives from all these major business houses and other essential services in the town, like the police, and these people, we invite them along and thank them for their support throughout the year.
Yeah, so like they do you a favour, but you always pay them in return. Also, this is off the top of my head then. Back when you first started out, the women in the community, did they have anything to do with the brigade? And if so, what? And their role now, is it, have they got a role within the fire brigade, or they don't exist, or has it changed, or what have you got to say about the women?
Well, as long as I've been in the service, and of course many, many years before that, the ladies always had a great role in the service of the Country Fire Authority. And hadn't it been for the support of the ladies, a lot of brigades wouldn't have been financially viable. And what I mean by that is that in those years and up till now, and it's still the same scene, they have ladies auxiliaries. Mm. And they're covered under the Act of the Country Fire Authority. And they're also covered under the rules and regulations of the various, the Victorian Urban Fire Brigade Association, and we have a welfare fund for them. And they work for the brigade, raising monies and providing dinners and suppers and things for the various meetings of the brigades. And it's only in recent years that they've actually come onto the fire ground, or into the actual brigade.
Mm-hmm.
Not in very large numbers. They're more so in the rural fire brigade side of the service. There's not very many urban brigades have the ladies participating in the ranks of the brigade as such.
And what do you think about the women coming into the brigade?
Well,
I had to ask.
I think that it's something that it's been the changing scene. I believe that it's something that we possibly got to accept. I have my reservations about it, particularly for someone that's been in it and been in so many skirmishes. I think there'd be many sort of situations that would be very demanding, extremely
hard,
demanding.
Hard for a woman to get out.
Yes. They're physically not sort of built to handle a lot of the situations, but they're not in the ranks on the fire ground in very great numbers, but policy or the government policy today is non-discrimination, and each one as good as the other, and in theory.
Mm.
And but I think that it is strictly a profession for physical, fit, strong men,
mm.
particularly in today's scene, which is a lot different to what it was years ago. You haven't a clue what you're going into, and you know, there could be a situation where a man and a wife could be wiped out of one scene, and what happens to the kids anyway? I mean, we go into exposed to extremely dangerous situations these days, and it only in very recent years that the chemical caves were put up in a lot of these industrial places and warehouses and what have you, and now we know before we go in what's in there. We never ever knew before. And you know, you get out and in the hose line, and you got to wear breathing apparatus, and if someone goes down, you've got to be able to get them out, drag them out. And I think that in some instances that would be probably very difficult for most females.
Yeah, and the overall structure of buildings and everything are greater than what, like, you know, you could go into a 20-storey flat or something these days, whereas years ago there was only, like, you didn't really even have a 2-storey home around, did you?
No.
Like, there's greater risk in things like that, women.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
very dangerous fighting fires today, particularly in the industrial scene. The to cut costs, the building methods have been changed, and buildings are very strong in their normal state. But these very large warehouses, where they've gone in for floor space and what have you, become very unsafe and very dangerous in fire when the heat starts to affect the steel girders or the clear span roof girders, and they collapse, fatigue, and then they fall in, and then the walls fall in after them, because the walls in most big warehouses and industry today are not self-supporting. They're more or less being held by the roof trusses. So there's been a change in that area where it's been brought about to keep costs down for
the quality
construction, and that they can become a very dangerous situation in a fire. And hose mending was every Sunday morning, and we had to hand stitch them, hand sew them, and put the back of tins in, put out a back of tin so we wouldn't sew up the other side. But today, of course, we've got vulcanizers and hydraulic testing machines and automatic coupling wiring, automatic machines for wiring couplings and putting bandits on them, and it's all so much easier, the maintenance side of the hoses, than it was years ago.
Yeah.
So it used to take you, you'd be lucky if you stitched 4 holes in an hour. Well, today you could nearly vulcanise 40 holes in there.
Yeah. It's a big change.
Yeah.
Something about training.
Yeah. The I think it should be realised that that the Country Fire Authority Service is one of the largest firefighting organisations in the world. It is the largest volunteer firefighting organisation in the world, and it's achieved quite a number of things. It's been the first fire service in the world to be able to be efficient enough to pull up fires in what we call a wildfire situation. And that was achieved the first time on record in the world, here in Victoria, when the Country Fire Authority battled the disastrous fires of Ash Wednesday. and they did pull fires up in a wildfire situation, particularly here in the Dandenongs at Cockatoo and around that area. And people in the minority do from time to time criticise the Country Fire Authority Service by saying they're not trained. In actual fact, they're one of the best trained fire services in the world, and we also have one of the finest training colleges in the world now at Fiscal, and people from all over Australia, not only from the other fire services but from industry, go to Fiscal Training College, where special courses are conducted and receive fire training and all aspects of the fire service they're trained in. And we issue the training manuals and there's driver training programs that the volunteers and particularly the professional staff must go through and pass before they are allowed to drive. And we have training manuals, and those people that see fit to criticise us, to say we're not trained, they should go and look at these things and find out for themselves that there wouldn't be many fire services in the world trained to the degree that our personnel are, and that includes the volunteers.
Yep, everyone's got a good idea of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, yeah, I've heard a lot about that too. People sort of knock it and see your face and, oh, they don't know what they're doing. I've heard that even up in our area a bit, and you think, then there's other people that defend it, like people who are involved with Ash Wednesday and things like that.
See, that one there, Julie, that's the authority structure as at the 30th of June 1988. That's how it's all set up. Didn't know how far you wanted to get into it, but...
That'd be good for the option to photocopy. Yep, okay.
You can have a line of that.
Oh, thank you.
And I really didn't know if you really want to get into it. You see, there's the sort of the training modules that come out. So it's all the activities throughout the state concerning the Country Fire Authority. It's professional people and volunteers and everything that goes on around the brigades in the state. It comes out once a month.
That's like good media coverage too.
Yeah.
Magazine,
yeah. Oh right, it's not out. You can't get it.
Oh yeah, you can subscribe to it. It's a five-year magazine. It hits the mess table at work, and it's usually a fight to read it. It's pretty tough.
Okay.